This is listener-supported non-commercial radio from the campus of Henry Ford College. We are WHFR Dearborn, featuring local and independent artists.
Man, it's good to be back here in Cleveland.
For over three decades, the Bop Stop has served as the home of jazz in Cleveland, featuring everyone from up-and-coming local talent to the legends of jazz. I'm Daniel Peck. Join Gabe Pollock and me weekly as we bring you an hour of live jazz on Live at the Bop Stop.
But people around the country know how great a club this is.
It's Live at the Bop Stop, Sunday afternoons at 2 on WHFR, making waves.
Over 60 and retired? Making ends meet, especially at the supermarket, is tough. BenefitsCheckup.org is a free website that helps you pay for food, medicine, even...
Broadcasting from the campus of Henry Ford College, this is WHFR Dearborn, listener-supported, non-commercial radio.
Welcome to this almost official first day of summer of the season of 2025, and welcome to the WHFR Journal. Susan McGraw with you. Woo, things are heating up, I'll tell you. We are officially kicking off summer. I think the first full day is tomorrow, but it kicks in kind of a little later tonight on this, the 20th. And, it just gets better from there. That's what I say anyway. Happy that you're here on this journal show, and thank you for listening to WHFR Dearborn. We are pleased to welcome our friend and friend of the Dearborn Public Library, Dan Lodge, who is going to join us in just a moment to talk about the summer reading program and so many things available at the library. Just because school is wrapped up does not mean, for many of us, does not mean that the library is doing the same. In fact, it's quite the contrary. So Dan Lodge, Library Supervisor, Dearborn Public Library, welcome. And I am looking at this summer reading program schedule. It is probably the biggest one I've ever seen. So glad to have you here. And tell us a little bit about the theme. I understand we have somebody named Norm joining us this summer.
Yeah. Well, first off, thank you very much for the opportunity. Yeah, Norm. Sort of like the friend, sort of like your buddy as you go on your summer reading way.
Norm, I get the pleasure of looking at him. He is actually a gnome. So it's not N-O-R-M, it's G-N-O-R-M, as in Norm the gnome. Super cute. He's at the beach with palm trees and a sun, and he's reading a book, and he's got sunglasses on. So his eyes must be really good to be able to read the book with their prescription sunglasses, let's just say.
But
adorable. Yeah, this is an adorable schedule. What should we expect to have available to not only young people that may need a little supplement from the school stuff, but also for the adults? Where should we begin?
Well, first off, it's been very popular the past couple of weeks. People have been really coming to the library and checking things out. We appreciate that. For adults, we have a lot of great programs. If you sign up on it, well, I should say for both children and adult, if you sign up on our Beanstack account, and you can keep track of your reading. Adults, we have a nice... A little treat. You can, after a certain point, you can actually have a book plate put into one of the books here in the library. Any book. Of course, it's got to be a very nice thing. You can't say, I hate the library, but little bits of advice. And then with got a lot of great programs coming up with adults. We talked with author Brian Burrow about the gunfighters. How did this kind of dispelling the myths about what really happened with the gunfighters in the Old West, like Billy the Kid. And Amelia Earhart, new book about Amelia Earhart. We'll have a talk with that, how her marriage to George Putman made her really... Gave her the gumption, gave her the money, gave her the prominence for her aviation career, and we have talks coming up with biography on Nelmer Leonard. So if you're interested in that, we have lots of stuff happening. And then on the children's side, we've, it's very, very creative. We have Dog, if you're interested in Kid Chemist, a lot of STEM programs, Kid Chemist. We have a lot of crafts. We have Superman Party. We have Scratch Art. A lot of great things happening. So I just want to encourage your listening audience to join us, to take part in all the great fun. And if you have any questions, you can visit our website, dearbornlibrary.org, or certainly call us at 313-943-2330.
Wonderful. And this Dearborn Public Library summer program covers not just the Centennial Library, but also the Bryant Branch and the Esper Branch. And so there is there's ample space, let's say, for all of the people that want to come in and enjoy partaking in these. Yes.
Oh, yes, of course. Thank you. Yeah. Like, for instance, we have story times at Bryant Library. So a lot of things happening at our branches.
Nice. A couple of things that I'm really particularly interested in, and these are some of the youth things coming up, like literally, well, one of them is like tomorrow. The Esper Branch has their Lego Club, and that's a meeting tomorrow at 11 o'clock, and you get to enjoy having some fun with Legos, but that's for kids between 5 and 12 years old. And then we know dragons are always big, but the new movie How to Train Your Dragon 2, which is making a huge, huge splash at the box office. It's setting records and everything, but the Wings of Fire Fan Club, and this is for people who love dragons. And I understand this is sort of an ongoing thing for sort of scavengers, and you get a membership card, play games, and meet other people, other fans of dragons. That's this coming Monday from 6 to 7, and that's for kids 8 to 12 years old. So I love how you kind of condense different age ranges, yet there are other things that are really open for sort of the whole family, which is...
Certainly. I wanted to highlight especially the Marvel Entertainment Illustrator event on July 29th.
Oh, yeah.
We'll have in our auditorium, we'll have it projected on the screen, and you can draw along.
We have coming up on, let me think, I'm looking at this one, some theater, some crafts, some things at some, there's the gallery, the Park West Gallery, things related to looking at beautiful works of art and then maybe putting your own spin on them and so on. So also I saw something about maybe writing a fan letter.
Dave Pilkey. Yeah, he's a famous children's book writer. Just a way to show... Hey, this is fun. Thank you. The way to thank him.
Yeah, I like that it's not just come in and we're going to sit around and read, which is not a bad thing, of course, especially if that's your passion. But so many different hands-on opportunities for literally babies all the way up to our senior members of the community. One of the things that is going on in August, as I'm looking at here, relates to an open mic night. And have you done that before? Because that sounds a little bit new to me. It's the summer 2025 open mic night in August. It's on a Wednesday, and it's open to musicians, singer-songwriters, poetry readers, and so on. And that's going to be in the auditorium. So I like how you're utilizing all the spaces. And this is an opportunity for our listeners that may have some poetry or a song or something they would like to share to potentially showcase to the community. Do we have to register for that kind of a thing, Dan?
Yeah, I would say a couple, like we 2-3 weeks beforehand, we open it up for registration. Yeah, because there's only so much time, and we want to give people 10 minutes to do their performance. But yeah, it's been very successful, very well attended, very well appreciated.
We don't have enough time to in our whole show to talk about all the variety of what's going on. But as you mentioned, just recommending go to the website, DearbornLibrary.org, and you can scan, there's a QR code that you can scan to get the flyer electronically and so on. Really, if you can't find something to do here through the summer program, then you are not looking at all, because I'll tell you, I have like five things that I've just, you know, if I could circle on my laptop, I would right now. So super cool. And I also, if we can, put in a little plug for a little joint session that we're doing. Dan, you want to tell our listeners about a little more of WHFR fun?
The theme of this year's summer reading is Color at Work. So we're having programs about arts, like the movies we show, the people we talk to. And I thought, the Henry Ford radio station colors the campus, colors the Henry Ford campus. And I wanted to get together with you. We can talk about the radio station, what's it about, what's the different kinds of programs, and how you can support it.
And when will we find that? And I've got it on my calendar, but I'll let you do the honors and how to get involved.
Tuesday, July 15th.
Does that have to be registered for, or can people just pop in?
It'd be nice. You don't have to particular for this case. It'd be nice, but also wanna, if you can walk up, that would be great.
Yeah, I look forward to meeting our listeners and anyone that wants to learn more about WHFR. And we are very grateful for the opportunity to partner with you in that regard and showcase some of the colorful things that we're presenting in this radio environment. And that includes you, Dan, and includes the Dearborn Public Library system, certainly. Again, I was just looking at the Marvel Entertainment thing on Tuesday, the 29th of July. Oh, I have some young people I can't wait to share that with. We are always excited that you and your team seem very open to creating new programs, new things. So if someone listening says, I've always wanted to see if they would do this, or I think it would be cool to get a group of people together to talk about that, you're open to that, yes? And maybe something.
Yeah. There's a program proposal form on our website. And I would also say, hey, if you're any local authors, particularly, specifically in the Dearborn area, let us know. And we could maybe set up a program.
Just as easy as that. Well, Dan, you do make it sound easy, but it is so accessible to partner with the summer reading process here at the Dearborn Public Library. I know you've been planning this, I'm certain, for months, and it feels like it is off to a tremendous start. As you indicated, the opportunity is already being taken advantage of at the library system. Any final thoughts, anything you'd like to share as we wrap up talking about this program?
Just wanted to hope everyone has a good summer and hope everyone takes time to stop by here at any of our libraries.
And again, Norm, G-N-O-R-M, and friends will be waiting for you here at the Dearborn Public Library. So thank you, as always, for your time, Dan, and keep up the great work. Are you going to get a little downtime at some point here this summer season, a little vacay? I can't say officially happy summer, but unofficially.
Well, I'll have some time very soon.
Good Thank for you. You. Well, you do enjoy that. And we look forward to connecting with you next month to talk a little bit more again about WHFR. And we thank you for all of the prolific work you are doing to keep this program going and making it bigger and better each year. So wishing you all the best. Enjoy the start of your summer.
Oh, thank you.
We've got more on the way. This is the WHFR Journal on this Friday, the 20th of the month of June. Stay with us.
I'm a pretty great multitasker. I can wash dishes and do laundry.
I can roller skate while walking my dog.
I can even order lunch while doing my homework. But I can't use my phone while driving. A distracted driver is one of the leading causes of death in the United States. So when it comes to driving, please, don't be a multitasker.
Don't drive distracted. A message brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, Project Yellow Light, and the Ad Council.
Thanks for staying with us on the WHFR Journal. In this next segment, we're going to celebrate Pride Month here in the month of June at WHFR. And we are very pleased to welcome on the line for the first time at WHFR Radio, actually, Mr. Joe Halsh. And Joe is the executive director of the Jim Toy Community Center out of Ann Arbor and also coordinator of Ann Arbor Pride 2025, an event taking place on August the the second. We thought we would bring in Joe and talk a little bit about the Jim Toy Center and also preparations for the big event that's underway, again, not too far off. So we say happy Pride Month and welcome to Joe Halsh, Executive Director of the Jim Toy Community Center in Ann Arbor, right here to WHFR. Welcome, Joe.
Thanks, Susan. I appreciate it.
We have a mutual connection, full transparency, very dear friend of mine, a graduate of Henry Ford College, and our program, our media arts program, by the name of Paul Raines, was able to kind of connect us together. Paul, I know, is doing some PR and sort of marketing social media stuff for you. You're in good hands with Paul, and I know you already know that. But I was so pleased when he shared with me his involvement in promoting this organization and especially this big event coming up in August, and offered for us to have an opportunity to share a little bit with it as well. And so we have anyone that knows anything about Ann Arbor Pride knows that it has been around for a very long time, different iterations, celebrating just this legacy of inclusion. And then the Jim Toy connection is all kind of coming together as I'm doing my research. But tell us a little bit about, first of all, what you do specifically with this organization and this event, and then we'll get into the nitty-gritty of it.
Yeah, absolutely. So rightfully so, I'm the, as you stated, I'm the executive director of the Jim Toy Community Center. And with that comes a host of different programming and events and advocacy and work. And our flagship event is really, you know, Ann Arbor Pride. Been around since 1995, since before Pride was cool. But you know, really working together with the community to bridge gaps, to help people find each other, and then also work with all sorts of different nonprofits, leaders, families, individuals in the community to make sure that one, they've got a place that they can go to, that they can call home, that you know, if they want and need. We also want to make sure that we're effective mouthpieces for the community, making sure that we're using our connections and network to advocate for what our community needs the most, and provide those services. And then, of course, you know, the community piece, that community bonding, strengthening piece that really continues to grow throughout the decades. And so it's been cool to be a part of that legacy and journey, and looking forward to continuing it on.
How long have you been executive director of the Jim Toy Community Center?
Yeah, I took over in 2020, February of 2020. A great time to start a new project in hindsight. But, you know, like most nonprofits and groups, we go through different chapters and ebbs and flows. And, you know, unfortunately, one of the first things that we had to do in 2020 was close down our physical space over in Broncourt, over in Kerrytown in Ann Arbor. But November of last year, we were fortunate enough to find this place and get keys. And really, since January, we've now opened our doors to form about 18 different groups. So everything from advocacy groups to social groups, some recovery groups as well. You know, honestly, one of my favorite parts about the queer community is our diversity. Our intersectionality is everywhere. Queer people are everywhere. And so from that, I get to meet a whole bunch of really cool people with a whole bunch of really different and varying needs, and figuring out, you know, how might we figure this out and pull on each other's resources, especially in a time where those resources are increasingly limiting. It's a true community center in the sense where everybody pitches in. Everyone does a little bit of work and brings their own superpowers, advocacy, heart into the space and creates it to what we need it to be.
The name of the community center alone, I think, speaks volumes to the commitment to this community of the name Jim Toy, named after just an incredible, iconic activist here. Tell those that aren't familiar with the story of Jim Toy just a little bit about his legacy.
Yeah, Jim is was a wonderful man. I had the privilege of knowing him towards his later years, but also then have the privilege of listening to other people's stories as people get to know or share how they've interacted with Jim. Jim is known as one of the first outed gay men in Michigan. And from there, he took his platform and really evolved it into building multiple spaces. Most well known is probably the Spectrum Center, which originally was the Office of Human Sexuality at University of Michigan. But he's also played critical roles in bridging gaps in the spiritual and religious communities with LGBTQ folks. He's also helped to start up or bring PFLAG into Ann Arbor. So during that parents group. He's also done work with HIV and AIDS advocacy. Literally, Jim was a man that lived and thrived on community and strengthening community, and he would bring what he could, his network, his resources, his expertise into a variety of different spaces to not just help the LGBTQ community, but those who love us and really kind of the greater Michigan area.
Well, you would know, Joe Halsh is joining us. He is the executive director of the Jim Toy Community Center, joining us on WHFR today as we celebrate Pride Month in the month of June, but also sort of forecast to a really big event coming up in Ann Arbor, and one that I think most anybody that has lived in the Metro Detroit community for any length of time is very aware of, and it is Ann Arbor Pride. And the sort of the subheading, a legacy of inclusion, which you already have spoken to a bit, I think, with the community, is just phenomenal, fantastic. Again, not going to get into politics so much on today's discussion, but times are tough. We know that. Mm-hmm. And we also recognize that people have the right, the ability to be who they are and not have to hide anything as a human being and a citizen of these United States. And that's how it should be. This Ann Arbor Pride Festival, just the word pride is right there in the title, you know? So I know it's been going on for a while, as you mentioned, many years. Tell us a little bit about what we might expect this time around and exactly when should we mark this on our calendar?
Yeah, absolutely. So Ann Arbor Pride is going to be on Saturday, August 2nd from noon to 9 in downtown Ann Arbor, right at the intersection of Main and Liberty. This year, we're planning on continuing what we built last year. And, you know, as most organizations continue to grow and improve on the lessons learned and what the community needs are. But Pride really is a living, breathing event for me. And I don't think that's just for specific to Ann Arbor. I think it's the same for Ipsy Pride, for Motor City Pride, for World Pride, for Chicago. You know, to me, prides are representative of the times and bringing in what we need. Pride is also a opportunity to look back and understand where we come from. And I think that's probably one of the bigger lessons this year when it comes to pride. You know, we look at what's going on at a national and local level, and we really want to build out an event that honors and celebrates our legacy, but also allows people to get involved and to advocate in ways that are meaningful and sincere to them and their work. So, you know, this year we're going to have the two stages again. So we'll have a community-centric stage where we'll have groups from the Neutral Zone. I'm really excited about them coming out this year and putting on an hour set to show off some of the youth in our community. We'll have improv. We'll have, of course, a lot of drag, different bands and musicians and artists as well. And, you know, kind of going back to, you know, the living, breathing piece of what Pride is, I think, you know, really trying to make it reflective of our communities. You know, Ann Arbor Pride should look like the community. Ipsy Pride should look like Ipsy. And honestly, that's one of my favorite things about going to these different prides around the area is really understanding what's important to folks and then really seeing all the different communities and groups that are present at these events, either by showing up or by being vendors or tabling there. This year, we're expecting about 200 vendors, and that ranges from different nonprofits, to different resources that our community might need, both health and physical health and mental health. There's also going to be spiritual organizations and churches there that support our community. There are different family groups and parent groups. And then there's businesses, small businesses, queer-owned businesses, really just a multitude of different ways to learn how people can connect. And honestly, then my goal is then the day after Pride, how do people carry Pride with them when the festival isn't there? And my hope is that, you know, they have an interaction. They may come there for a show or a particular performer or favorite restaurant, but then they meet a group of maybe the trans community and stuff that they're working on and want to be a part of that. Maybe they meet free mom hugs and they just get that moment of family love and support that they can then carry on into their friend groups or back into their communities. To me, that's what I want, to make sure that we do, that it's not just a 24-hour event, but, you know, you're able to carry on the messaging, the support, the love, especially when times get tough.
And that's that whole legacy component. It's not only the legacy of the people that we name, you know, community centers after and hold important titles, but it's literally what are we doing every single day to further this cause and certainly continue to grow a community that is welcome and safe and comfortable and confident in doing anything and everything that every other single person gets to do. So that's... Mm-hmm. The human race, it's the way it should be. When we talk about sort of some FAQs of Ann Arbor Pride, you've indicated that it is family friendly, right? Mm-hmm. And I know that there may be some things later in the evening, maybe more adult oriented, but for the most part, bring the kids, yes?
Exactly. Yeah, we'll have a kid zone this year. We're bringing that back, which I'm really excited about this year. We'll have different games, face painting. We always have drag story time. That's been a nice, fun part that people look forward to a lot. So that's, of course, back as well. And everything's open to the public and free. So people are welcome to come around and explore and learn. That's what it's there for. Certainly the queer community is going to be present. There are also going to be allies that will be there. And the allyship looks in a variety of different ways that they can, you know, interact and support while honoring this space and what we're trying to do there. You know, my parents came to their first Pride when I started running it. And so they drove up from Ohio. And for me, it was a nice opportunity for them to see how not alone I was. They got to meet some of my really good friends. I've been some of the other volunteers that I've been working with. You know, the person who cuts my hair was there. And so it was, you know, it's just one of those things where, you know, I like to show off what we can do. As a community, we can do an awful, awful lot. And for people who don't understand, or, you know, just kind of see these things from a parade on TV or a little, you know, moment on a commercial kind of thing, you know, to really go and to be there to see what we can do and how we do it, I think is really, really cool. And again, opens up the door to love and support and to figure out, you know, putting these human, ultimately these human faces to some of these larger national issues that we talk about that can seem a little, you know, far off or a little fuzzy, but, you know, when you can put a face to a person who happens to be trans, you know, it really kind of humanizes some of the discussion and allows people to learn and understand.
Well put, Joe. As we're talking about Ann Arbor Pride 2025 taking place on Saturday, August the 2nd, we do encourage you to check out the website of Ann Arbor Pride. It's simply AnnArborPride.com, and there's tons of information there, and it's going to be huge. 200 vendors. I mean, that's incredible. Yeah. And I'm so grateful that it is continuing to grow and be embraced not only by the Ann Arbor community, but by surrounding areas coming in that may not have their own, you know, Pride event in their own hometowns. But what about the logistics, literally, like parking, and should we plan to bring, you know, water bottles, or will there be lots of food? Or, you know, how's the day going to look?
Yeah, absolutely. So the festival itself is going to be all the way down, so Main Street from Paleo down to PNC Bank, for those that are familiar. And then we'll take Liberty all the way down from Pretzel Bell, where the main stage will be, all the way up to the State Theater. So pretty decent sized footprint there. Many restaurants, especially the ones with patios and porches and stuff, will have easy kind of grab and go food and drink options for people, because it is a social district as well. The whole map will be in a social district, so people are encouraged to, of course, support the local businesses, and then and kind of meander around. That's completely okay. There's a few large parking structures that are right around the area that make parking a little bit easier. So there's the one at Williams, that's probably the most popular one. But then there's also some over down by Ashley Street. There's a pretty decent sized parking structure there that makes it easier for folks. But, you know, obviously we will be blocking off the streets to limit traffic in those areas, because we also want to make sure that it's a safe environment. Safety becomes a really big part in making sure that people can enjoy and, you know, and focus on why we're there.
Great. Thank you. I'm sure there, as every appropriate and safe event in the Ann Arbor community, there will be police present. I'm sure security present, just to make sure that that's not something anybody has to worry about.
Yeah. So what we do is we hire a private security team to really help kind of monitor within those bounds. Certainly police officers are stretched and limited with what they can do. So we do hire private security, lesbian owned company as well. So, you know, we try and find other members of our community to help do that. And then we have a liaison with the Ann Arbor Police Department. There's a couple LGBTQ officers that we just talk, you know. It's a really difficult relationship sometimes to manage in between the LGBTQ community and the police. And so, you know, one thing we want to do in that space, and again, it goes into that safety and security feelings of the individuals attending, as well as then kind of the bigger picture security strategy. But how we do that is through a lot of conversations, understanding what's comfortable for folks, what's uncomfortable for folks, why that history is there. Because if we're looking back at the very first Pride, it was a riot. It was a demonstration against police coming into queer spaces and arresting people for wearing clothes that didn't belong to your gender, or for hanging out with people with other queer people. So it's definitely a dynamic that we have to pay attention to and put more care into. With that being said, again, there's, I feel like we're doing a pretty good job, and of course, always open to additional feedback on how we might be doing to improve. But, you know, kind of going back to the very beginning, when you can put faces to some of these issues and concerns and topics that we need to talk about, I feel like the more holistic approach we can go and really make it a more inviting environment for everybody.
And I'm so grateful, Joe, that this is being done in such a way that does keep that sort of fun and creative and, you know, musical and exciting side of it, but also that undertone of the education and that just very strong sense of community and frankly, the serious nature of why and how this kind of whole thing started. There's, you know, never probably been more of a need for that at this time that we're in currently. So very grateful that this continues and bigger and better than ever. You know, we always think about it's this sort of the whole, is hate something that you're born with? No, of course not. It's something that you learn. And mm-hmm. So bringing families out, having people bring their kids out and, you know, to just experience this just tremendously creative community and all the positivity and all the wonderful things that are affiliated with it is just a great place to start if you're looking for a conversation, right?
You know, and I think that, you know, also for members of the queer community, especially the younger members who maybe haven't had the experience of advocating for marriage equality, or if they weren't around during the AIDS crisis or Stonewall or some of these other things, it's honestly a really solid reminder of where we come from. You know, we don't share DNA like other groups, but we share a lot of different life experiences that we all can relate to in our own shape and form. And so when we're able to kind of bridge the gap in between the generations that have fought and have done their advocacy to get us to where we are today, you know, it's been a pretty easy couple, 4 years before this point. And so now here we are again. And you know what? This isn't the first time. And so to be able to bridge the gap and have the legendary people that have come before us that have really planted this garden that we're all celebrating in, to be able to bridge the gap, tell those stories, and understand, you know, we're a pretty resilient group of people. We're pretty, we've been able to survive, and we'll continue to survive. And so, honestly, I think that's been the more relevant themes or more apparent themes to me this Pride season, maybe as compared to past. And then again, using that leverage of community and belonging to share those stories, to share ideas, and then to also make sure that torch is passed, that responsibility of advocacy, of education, of community building gets passed down and continues to grow.
Well put. Well, we know that you are doing everything in your role to make sure that these things, these wonderful, not only goals, but, you know, absolute musts on the list are going to continue to be there for this community. And for that, our community is grateful. When we talk about the Jim Toy Center and how it's intertwined with Pride, Ann Arbor Pride 2025, and mm-hmm. Sort of a variety of things in that sort of Washtenaw County, and some of it spills over into Wayne County as well, we know. Mm-hmm. So it's a mission that is being supported by more than just the executive director, but you got to have somebody really strong at the top to make sure that things go the way they need to. And I understand that there's an opportunity literally this afternoon to take a peek at the community center. Tell us a little bit about this open house coming up today.
Yeah, I'm so excited for this open house. You know, since opening the new center, we've been able to build 18 different groups, and all of those have been really, you know, motivated by community and community needs. So I'm really excited for people to come out this afternoon, starting at 4:30. We're at 552 South Main in Ann Arbor. And what we're going to be doing there is showing off the place. You know, Ann Arbor Pride is the largest fundraiser. And so for people to be able to see where those resources and time and talent go throughout the year, it goes into the community center. And so we'll be hosting some light appetizers and some strong networking for people to be able to either get the help and support that they need. And again, that looks like a bunch of different ways. It could be, you know, people want to be more vocal and more politically activated. And there's certainly opportunities there. For others, it's a safe community where they can see other people like them and talk about these issues that are facing the community, or even at the different stages of coming out and self-identity and self-discovery and that. And there's also a book club and a knitting group. So, you know, all sorts of different ways to, you know, all different comfort levels for people to find, you know, their belonging and their home. And, you know, even for those outside of Washtenaw County, we're part of a statewide network of LGBTQ centers. We're part of a statewide organization that also links up all the prides together. So if Ann Arbor is too far or is just, you know, not accessible to you, we've got plenty of virtual online resources that we can share. We also, you know, have a map of all the other things that are going on in different communities. So, you know, happy to help connect people into some of the other great organizations that are maybe, you know, smaller, maybe less well known, but are still doing some powerhouse work in their community.
The word community is the one that keeps coming, rising to the top. And that really is that just says it all, that it's what this is all about. And we're grateful for your time today, Joe, in sharing a bit about what we can look forward to with Ann Arbor Pride coming up August the 2nd in Ann Arbor, as well as this afternoon's open house. And we wish you, you know, much success with both of those and all of the other things going on in between, because we recognize that it's not just that, but it's, you know, pretty much a 24/7 operation. But thank you to you and your team of supporters for not only your willingness to do the hard work, but also to help us recognize and realize that this community is for everyone. You know, inclusivity means inclusivity. There's no judgment there, and that's what this is all about. So for anyone that has felt marginalized or didn't, you know, voiceless or just needing some affiliation, this is just a great place to get started. If someone wanted to learn more about this afternoon's open house, about the Jim Toy Community Center, or just to, you know, ask a question or something about Gay Pride, yeah, about Ann Arbor Pride, how can they reach out to you?
Yeah, the community center's website is jimtoycenter.org. We've got annaberpride.com for more of the festival information. You can also follow us on Facebook and Instagram for a lot of updates. Shout out to Paul. Thanks. Thanks for all of that help. I really appreciate it. And, you know, again, there's tons of ways to learn about the different events, but also different ways to get involved. If you're looking to volunteer, not everything has to be in person. We certainly take advantage of help in all different ways, whether it's 1 hour or a full year. There's tons of ways to reach out. And if anyone needs anything, they're more than welcome to reach out at hello@jimtoycenter.org. Shoot us an email and we can absolutely figure out, you know, what connections, what resources we can send your way.
Sounds great. Certainly here at Henry Ford College, we have some organizations to support this community. We have SAFE at HFC. We have the student organizations that are doing amazing things to continue to keep our community, our small community, at the college level at our institution, vibrant and robust. And again, literally that feeling of you are not alone and there are others here to support you. And as an ally personally, I take it very seriously as well. So we thank you, continued success, and have a great open house tonight. And we will hope to see you in Ann Arbor on the 2nd of August.
Thanks, Susan. Happy Pride to you and your listeners.
Thank you. Same to you. This is the WHFR Journalist. We celebrate Pride Month here in this month of June, right here on 89.3 FM. Perhaps you're listening on the web at WHFR.FM. Either way, we're so glad you're here. Do stay with us. More on the way.
Put your phone on D&D. That means that do not disturb when you're driving. And when you're going from point A to B, I need you to stay safe, please. So always sing with me. So put your phone on D&D. That means that do not disturb when you're driving. And when you're going from point A to B, I need you to stay safe, please. So always remember this beat.
Don't drive distracted. A message brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, Project Yellow Light, and the Ad Council.
Thanks for staying with us on the WHFR Journal. In our last couple of segments today, we're going to get a little bit environmental, and we're going to hear about some Lake Superior and Northern Michigan and Minnesota phenology. And let's talk a little bit about that. Our first piece from Public Radio Exchange is from the Lake Superior Project. And in this segment, we're going to talk with Joe Kravitz, a longtime volunteer for the North County Trail Association from Ironwood, Michigan, about his own description of what botany means to him, and talk about a lot of the rare finds in that northern area. That's from just a few days ago. And then we're going to go back a few summer solstices, actually, from one 9 years ago. And this is from Northwoods Phenology. And this is called Summer Solstice, the longest day of sunlight. You know, today is the summer solstice, by the way. So we hope you enjoy and take advantage of all of those extra moments, but also just a little bit about kind of what's involved in the process and what kind of plant life we can experience moving forward. Have a great rest of your weekend. Happy summer, and thanks for listening to the WHFR Journal.
My name is Joe Kravitz from Ironwood, Michigan, and I am a member of the North Country Trail Association for 20 years now. I do work the section of trail in Wisconsin that is on the eastern edge called the Heritage Chapter. We have 40 miles, 30 of which is almost complete. I was born in Ironwood, Michigan, part of the mining community, not as big as the Iron Range up there in Minnesota, but certainly we had all our mines closed by 1966. They were all closed. But otherwise grew up as a person who fished with my grandpa, so no hunting, no paddling, lots of brook trout fishing. Okay. Love that. Great way to grow up. Back in 05, there was an article in the newspaper suggesting that if you want to do some of the North Country Trail, join us at Weber Lake. I did. And I met Gaylord Yost and Mike Stafford. Gaylord Yost was an old-time employee of the National Forest Service. He is my mentor. I consider him as such. He's can't do trail work anymore. He's in his 80s. But as such, he was a great mentor, and I love the guy. He was a board member of many years of the North Country Trail. And in the beginning of the trail, we had no official trail beyond that, which was an old ski trail, or it is yet a maintained trail. It's called the Euler Ski Trail, probably the most remote in Wisconsin. And within that component of the Euler Ski Trail by Weber Lake, Iron Belt, Wisconsin, they have a no-cut zone. It is 2,500 acres. You are quite in a rather old-growth part of it.
What keeps you doing this public service work?
Well, certainly I've been gifted with good health. Got to use it. Anybody that does work like I do on Silent Trails will know that there's a substantial number of 70 and 80-year-olds that work on that trail, and you'd be surprised at how hard they do work. I've always been outdoors, worked hard on my life, so this was nothing new to get out there and just break your back and go home and rest up for the next day and go back to it again. But I've never had it easy, so without a television in my life, you have to find other ways to enjoy life. And my kids found out how great that is without a television, what they can find out in life without a TV.
Is that one of your secrets to good health, is to not have a TV?
A vegetable garden.
Aha!
A vegetable garden. And stay away from the ice cream sodas. I found that out when I was a young man.
Okay. What are some of your favorite trail finds over the years? And what do you like to look for when you're hiking?
I had opportunities to join some botanists or some people I knew who were botanists on their hikes. But as time went on now, a lot of these botanists are retired. There is a Northwoods Native Plant Society. They conduct hikes. Not only for flowers, but for like the champion red pine in the Sylvania wilderness, to go see that one. This is a national champ. We do have a brochure for our trail with wildflowers. It may have 80 flowers on it. I never counted them. And there are some nice finds. There's so many different flowers out there from different families that I couldn't point one out. I do have a couple flowers I've discovered in the woods, of course, that are friend orchids, which are pretty nice.
So what are those orchids?
I do have 25 orchids on my bucket list now. There's about 53, 54 in the north woods. The book that I use is Kim and Cindy Ryson, and that is a Northwoods Naturalist series, I believe. And about 25 orchids. I've only got the one threatened orchid on my bucket list, and so it gets harder all the time, but there are quite a bunch of orchids out there still yet to find. Just find the right habitat in the right month, they'll be there.
So what is the endangered orchid that's on your bucket list?
An endangered orchid, the threatened one is a small round-leafed orchis, Amer orchis rotundifolia, and that is in a state natural area. I love my state natural areas here in Wisconsin, and there are a lot of protected areas. I'm a member of the Northwoods Land Trust. They have properties. They're wonderful places to access. As such, they do have a lot of accessible trails, very family-friendly trails, and two of their properties that they own are within the National Network of Old Growth Forests, one in Iron County here and one within the city of Rhinelander, a state natural area, which is typical morainal topography, hemlock. It's an outstanding site in the city of Rhinelander.
So you were teaching me some things I didn't know about butterworts.
I brought this issue up because some people here from Minnesota, and if they're along the North Shore here, you have butterworts all the way up the North Shore in the rocks. So as such, you know, I was inquiring of them, you know, if they've seen them in some of the areas here. You have the, it's accessible, of course, as a state natural area, the Butterworts Cliffs State Natural Area, which is closed till July 15th. It is a sanctuary for certain birds who nest there. And it's an unusual flower because based on the seaside cliffs, that it grows in a wet environment, a little higher up, just get the spray. And it traps insects, so it's an insectivorous plant. Hard to believe, as opposed to what we all know as the pitcher plant and several others that grow in bogs. So highly unusual in that respect, and it traps the insects by its leaves, which curl up. It has sticky hairs on the inside, which exudes a, the substance, and then it grabs the insect, or they land on it, and of course you know what happens after that. They break it down, and the plant absorbs the juices, I guess.
And have you witnessed butterworts in the wild, Jim?
No, I haven't. There are one or two sites in Wisconsin that have them, but to find them, you'd have to be in Minnesota here, where they're a special concern. In Wisconsin, they're endangered, so not too much. And same thing with Michigan. There's only a couple of sites that have them. And by the middle of May, you see a lot of your ephemerals, spring wildflowers that come out. And each section of trail has its own flower habitats. There's been some neat discoveries. We have maybe five orchids on our trail. Most people know the pink lady slipper and purple orchid, fringed orchid. It's its own genus, the Platanthera. Fringed orchids are mostly a bog orchid, but there's others. And let's see, the other orchid we discovered last year, a spotted coral root. We do have a spotted and a striped coral root, but they may not show up for years, so a couple of them never did show up again when I found them. Last year, Bob Foster Falls, the guys are building a bridge, and when I ended the day, I looked down by their tool trails, and they were only a foot away from four spotted coral roots. I've never seen one in full bloom. I came back 2 weeks later, and there was my picture. But for a person who would like to, let's say, botanize or study flowers a little bit more, enjoy them, get yourself a hand lens. It will open up that flower like you wouldn't believe, especially like the violets last year in my backyard. There's probably five different ones over a month period. I picked a violet, put the hand lens on it, and look into the throat or the petals of that flower and see all those hairs in there. It is miraculous what you can see with a hand lens. So a little information there if you're interested. Little magnifying component to it, and basically you hold it right up to your eye too, with the flower. But otherwise, I have, between the Upper Peninsula of Michigan and northern Wisconsin, there are literally hundreds of places I'd like to see or visit. And the Upper Peninsula is a treasure, a gem, and from one end to the other, even Lake Michigan down there has protected areas, state natural areas, and some very beautiful areas. And I know Wisconsin does have an endemic flower right here in the Northland, in the Shequamigan National Forest, named after Norman Fassett, one of your first botanist down there at UW-Madison. He worked at Aldo Leopold, and that endangered flower here is named after him. Fassett's local weed. It's a bean plant, or bean family. And then in Michigan here we have what they call the Michigan monkey flower, and that's on the eastern end of the Upper Peninsula and a little bit below. And that is one of the world's rarest plants too. Endemic to Michigan, so, but not that far away.
That's completely fascinating.
Flowers are fun. Get that hand lens. And a book. Thank you very much, everybody.
The Lake Superior Project is funded in part by the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. You can find this feature along with supporting information at WTIP.org.
Jill Anderson is a botanist and plant ecologist, and she joins us periodically to talk about phenology, or what's going on in our woods and waters right now. Welcome, Jill.
Hi.
Well, the longest day of sunlight is just around the corner, the summer solstice. So what's going to go on between now and then?
Okay, yeah. Oh, such a magical time of year for light, isn't it?
Mm.
Oh,
just incredible. What did I hear? That the western sky is still doesn't really lose that lingering light till midnight.
Really?
Yeah, people from other parts of the country, you know, who don't experience the, well, they don't experience the winter dark either. They just are blown away this time of year by, you know, how much light there is in the morning, you know, and in the evening. So, and of course, that means that plants and all of the life that has to be compressed into our summer is going at it with great enthusiasm. Lots going on, despite what has been continued to be kind of a roller coaster. You know, at the end of May and the 1st of June at our house, we had 23 and 24 degrees, and not just a little bounce down, but cold for hours. So even some of our native plants that are very well adapted to this place, if they had just put out their first fronds, leaves of herbaceous plants, there was, I saw a significant amount of nipping at those, not completely deadly, but yeah, definitely had some things took a hit. Our conifers now are wearing their spring green, so they don't kind of come out of their buds with their needles until a little bit later than the deciduous species. So they're still sporting a very springy green, and of course the needles are still very soft and flexible in all of the conifer species, even though later on some of them will get to be very stiff and pointy and kind of prickly. But right now they're all very soft. In terms of flowering things, depending upon, you know, exactly where you are, even to just a microhabitat kind of placement, there are still clouds of blooming choke cherries and pin cherries especially down close to Lake Superior are still really a lot in bloom, although here and there are some that are already in fruit. Same with choke cherries. Inland, though, their micro habitat is influencing a lot of this, but gosh, there's still just some beautiful clouds of choke cherry blooms. And even service berries along the lake still, the early blooming ones are still going. And I've been noticing in particular at those, in those pre-sunset light conditions, oh, the choke cherries in particular are just luminous. It's just kind of amazing to get to see them in those conditions. We've got Canada Mayflower. So I even made a list so I wouldn't leave anything out. Canada Mayflower, Gold Thread, Blue Bead Lily is just beginning in some places. Other places hasn't quite started blooming. Variety of new violets, blue in particular, violets are in bloom. Moxon flowers or pink lady slippers are showing off. A panicle bluebell, still a lot of those blooming in the woods. We have currants, and our early gooseberries are already in fruit, and the fruits are welling up. So that portents some good things to come. Naked miterwort, I've seen that blooming in several places. Baneberry and wild sarsaparilla and mountain ash, and still a lot of strawberries. Let's hope they're getting a lot of good pollination action. Sweetgrass, if people are familiar with that particular grass, that's very prominent right now in terms of its bloom. Things that are coming up I expect to see pretty soon here are the one-flowered wintergreen. So that's this very small, delicate, single-flowered bloom that's tipped down. So to really see its face, you have to gently turn it up. But if you can get down that low to smell it, it has a wonderful lemony fragrance, just a really spectacular fragrance from this tiny flower. I think it won't be too long before the wild roses will be showing in some places in the sunnier, drier, and warmer environments. Highbush cranberries, I think the same. Inland in particular, I think those will be along here pretty quick. And the yellow water lilies, there are some places where they're not going to be too much longer before they're in bloom. And of course, the pine, which are going to do their what's referred to as their candling, which is when their flowers are out and will be, if you're not already experiencing it, will be.
Oh, yeah, red pine candles are Yeah. Maybe 5 inches.
Right. And you've seen them shedding their pollen already.
Yeah. Oh, big clouds of it. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's always when we have clear, especially if there's a little bit of a breeze or a big wind even, but dry and low humidities, that's when you can get these really incredible kind of simultaneous releases that create these clouds that just can travel great distances and show up on your vehicle windows and on layered all over everything.
I'm seeing a tiger swallowtail butterfly.
Yeah, tiger swallowtails. I am too, seeing more of them. I saw my first monarch last week, but that's the only one I've seen so far. I was west of here last week and there were more frequent there, not huge numbers, but I did see my first one last week. Another butterfly that's been seeing a lot of are skippers. So these are small butterflies, and they have very proportionally to their wings, they have large bodies. So rather than kind of delicate bodies and big wings, these have small wings and larger bodies proportionally. And so there's a lot of them out. Lots of dragonflies coming now. There's always a big synchronized emergence of club tails at this in June. There's evidence of that going on. Jewel wing damselflies, I've seen them out and about. So these are the damselflies with the emerald green bodies and the all black or half black and half transparent wings. They're all out just in time for the big mosquito emergence, which was slowed a little bit this year. So we got to enjoy some longer stretches here of spring and early summer without intense mosquitoes, but they're here now just in time for the dragonflies and the damselflies.
To join their friends, the blackflies.
Yes, to join the and a few deerflies. I think it's safe to say that summer's underway.
Can't wait. Jill Anderson regularly fills us in on current events in the woods. Thanks for helping us understand what happens before the solstice.
You're welcome.
Mexico.